G'day, mate. How are you?
Not so bad, mate. Yourself?
Very, very good. What sort of... you collect records?
I do collect records.
What sort of records turn you on?
All sorts, mate. Anything. Just depends on the mood I'm in, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And give us an example of, say, five records that you like right now.
Right now? Yeah, tough one. Probably into the Kiwi reggae, sort of R&B, Fat Freddy's, Black Seeds, all that sort of stuff. I don't know, as far as albums go, that's hard. It's like saying pick your favourite album.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
more or less impossible. I don't know, recent releases, Homebrew, I don't know if you've heard of Homebrew.
Homebrew from Avondale?
Yes.
Yeah.
They've just released a new album after about an 11-year hiatus.
Yep.
We went to the gig there, or Get Back Together gig, a couple of weeks ago, which was pretty good. That would probably be the pick at the moment, if you had to narrow it down to one album.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I suppose the good thing about being a collector is you never really have those five.
No.
Good can change, can't it?
That's it. Yeah, day-to-day basis, really. It just depends on, like, say, the mood you wake up in.
Yeah.
You're not feeling too motivated. Chuck on something that's pretty chargy, electronic music, maybe.
Wonderful. Bit of a trick question.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably someone out there that knows those five.
Yes.
But, of course, a real collector or anyone that's immersed in music is never going to be able to figure out from one day to the next.
Especially with a eclectic taste, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was saying before, you know, one day it could be Celine Dion, the next day it could be, I don't know, Lionel Richie, you know, the next day it could be some obscure South African, you know, band or something, you know. It's just like say, just again.
What do you think of the prices of concerts here in New Zealand?
We don't really get enough gigs, I don't think. It's obviously expensive to get people down here. We're usually piggybacking off Australia. A lot of the bands that I've been to see in the last, not in the last couple of years with COVID, but probably the sort of 5 to 10 years before that, most of them I was having to go to Australia for.
Really?
Particularly like the bigger sort of rock bands and stuff, you know, like they just don't make their way here. Big day out, I think it's probably a big loss for us.
Yeah.
I know it was sort of starting to fail financially and the venues and that. After they left Mount Smart, they were struggling to keep things up. But I'd say probably the 2003-04 to about 2010 era of the big day out would have been the best era of concerts, I'd say, in New Zealand. I mean, that's without going back to Sweetwaters and things like that, but modern concerts and day gigs, I think, would be the epitome.
What do you think of Macca, Paul McCartney, not coming to New Zealand, 83 years old or whatever he is, playing non-stop for 3 hours? What do you think about that?
Yeah, if Elton John can do it, surely he can.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's incredible.
I've seen Elton John a couple of times here, seen him in Wellington and in Auckland.
What do you think?
Awesome. Yeah.
Great, eh?
Yeah.
What do you think of this one with Dua Lipa?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's good to see him, I guess, broadening his genre a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's always, you know, had different flavours with all his albums, like, you know, got a bit sort of electronic there for a while. Was it Leather Jackets, I think the album was, and the one after that was quite a electronic feel to it. But yeah, I definitely prefer his more like the pop rock stuff that he did, the dad rock, you know?
Yeah.
All the classics, Yellow Brick Road and Blue Moves and all those sorts of things.
I like the Take Me to the Pilot days, from then on,
yes,
you know, pretty sort of cool dude.
Yeah,
Paul McCartney, I suppose, when you think about it, not because he didn't come here, but when you think about it, what a survivor.
So,
an incredible survivor.
Sweet.
And also the Stones, of course.
Yes.
I mean, the blokes that you've been talking about.
Saw them at Western Springs.
Western Springs, yes.
Yeah.
What about... I suppose if you look at the real big concerts, I suppose the Bowies and the Led Zeppelins of those days, Marleys.
Led Zeppelin. Yeah, that would have been a big one.
Would have been fantastic.
I think my favourite one ever would be probably Joe Cocker.
Yeah,
was unreal. Saw him at the Civic.
Yes.
Intimate concert and really dynamic. Halfway through the gig and he's out there with his buddy Magnum of Wine, and just that raspy voice. And especially as he was getting on, like it was his last gig that he did here.
Yes.
Mind-blowing. But every time I hear an album of his, it just gives me the chills. Especially the live ones. I've got both of his live albums and they're just mind-blowing.
I suppose a lot of people were introduced to him via Woodstock and stuff like that. But,
yeah, yeah. Well, he was a feral bugger back in his day.
I mean, the gyrations, the tie-dye, and the sort of bug everybody else. I'll shave if I want to.
Dogs and Englishmen.
Definitely the former. It was terrific. So, I mean, to be lucky enough to have a taste right across the board.
Yes.
Rather than being enveloped.
Yes.
Which I suppose everyone's got entitlement to the envelope, but the point is that when you want to be fed what you're hungry for,
yes,
you know, as you get older or as you get more sideways to where you've been, there's so much music out there. There's so much stuff.
Especially with streaming now, I found with records that was a good way to kind of expand your horizons a bit, you know, just pick up, that looks good, but with Spotify and stuff like that, you know, the amount of music that's on there now, some really obscure stuff, and you know, you can be listening to the stuff you like and it'll just pick up on it and recommend things, and the amount of music I've discovered through that is just mind-blowing, you know, so it's, you know, sort of like the digital age, I guess, of record collecting, you know, but
you don't
have all the stuff taking up room.
Yes, I wonder what's next on the horizon technology-wise. I mean, someone's bound to invent something.
Well, there's already AI music coming through, isn't there?
Yes,
just bands with music that's not even been created by humans.
The old thing was, you know, if the tree falls in the forest and there's no one there, is it making any sound? If you're in a church and there's an organ automatically making any music, but there's no one there to listen to it, is that music?
That's it, yeah.
You know, sort of, the AI,
just
I suppose.
Noise.
Is it? I mean, and then you listen to birds.
Yes.
Birds that are making some sort of song.
Yes.
Well, it is music, isn't it? In many ways. Yeah. It's not just a whole lot of garbled, whatever.
Yeah.
Polly wants a cracker sort of scenario, but I suppose with AI, that's going to be very difficult to discern in some cases if it's just instrumental. But it's also going to be interesting.
There's not a lot of, even like groups or artists anymore that produce their own music, you know what I mean? Like, it's all done digitally.
Yes.
They might, you know, sample and whatever, but that's one thing, like homebrew, for those guys to be able to go and put a bloody 5 or 6 piece band on the stage and perform all their music that they've created on a sample created digitally, you know, through Serato or whatever, and then to be able to actually take that and go and replicate it in a manual instrument, like, that's pretty cool, I reckon.
That's pretty cool.
You know?
Yeah, that's
to be able to match that and add that energy of a live instrument rather than just a DJ and someone rapping over it, you know, which a lot of rap and hip hop is these days. I always sort of swore I'd never be one to, say, music was better back in my,
yes.
It wasn't going to be like, my mum when Eminem came out, but now it's, a lot of the mumble rap and stuff, it just doesn't really, the voice bending and auto-tune and all that sort of stuff, that doesn't really sync well. That's probably the only sort of music that I don't really get is, if you've got someone that's singing and they're using a digital enhancement over their voice, sure there's balancing and moderating it to fit in with the acoustic side, but if you're just peeling out, basically computer generated or computer altered voice, it doesn't get out of it.
It is a bit.
I mean, I don't know, Pink Floyd and those guys, they didn't use a lot of voice synthesizers and stuff like that, but it wasn't the computer changing it and matching it with a beat, know what I mean? Like, it was they were making the music with the beat.
That's right. And it was, to be fair to them, it was very early days.
That's it, yeah.
And a lot of it was innovative.
Was experimenting.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the live at Pompeii, there's a documentary on it on YouTube, and they're all sitting, it's before the gig, and they're all sitting on the stage, and they've got their dogs there, and they're just rehearsing, making new music and stuff. And they got these two, the Egyptian bloody bloodhounds, big things, and they go and they get the microphone, and they're scratching the dog, and he's making a howling noise, and they're recording it and putting it into the music, and altering it, it's just
amazing.
Experience. I mean, probably drugs consumed and to get them thinking like that. But
Dark Side of the Moon, I mean, how many years did it spend at number one as an album?
Yeah,
I mean, incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look at the resale value, alleged resale value of their records, early records.
It's
quite incredible.
The early originals.
I mean, and there must have been millions of them pressed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet they've got
Same with the Led Zeppelins and that.
Oh yes,
Ludwig pressings and that, and, you know, like, just go silly money, especially in competition, but I mean, when like you're anything though, like, you know, demand and
yes,
what people are willing to pay, you know, if it's rare, people are, you know, it's like a magpie right with a shiny thing, you know, it's
exactly,
people have got the money to do it and they want it, they'll pay it. So.
And then they'll got it, you know, then they want something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's
so
the next thing?
It never really stops. I mean, yeah. I don't know if, I mean, there probably are no 78 collectors here. Mm. Not that I'm a 78 collector, but you sort of realise that just because something's rare, it doesn't mean
it's valuable. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for a 78 collector, they'd be quite well off in New Zealand if they went to op shops there, because no one sort of knows about them. And they're heavy, and they're very dangerous too.
And it's, they're hard to play, you know, you need specialist equipment.
That's right, and they're heavy yourself because you've got to reinforce the floor. So if you're an apartment dweller, probably no good idea.
No good,
45's a pretty good stool, I think.
Yes.
You know, they're playing some over here at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, the different 12 inches, either the EPs or the albums.
Yeah, a lot of the 78s were lacquer too, eh?
So
they wore and they deteriorated over time.
But Shopify probably allows us to hear the public domain stuff, which would give the recording of dog howlers even more more opportunity to record whatever. And when the AI gets hold of the public domain stuff, in the 20s or 30s, or whatever it is, be it on 78 or 33, all hell's going to break loose.
Yeah.
So, hats off to the musicians.
Yeah. I think too, like, a lot of that stuff was never, you know, digitised either. Like, you know, there were, you know, a lot of it was analog recording and analog masters, and back
then
they didn't have the technology to preserve it as well as they did, you know, like,
correct.
Sort of 70s and 80s was when they started getting that plating process, you know, right, and just...
And how many wonderful albums from Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Wonder should have been lost in the back of a cab.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to do the whole thing all over again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is good. Well, thank you very much, mate.
No worries.
Good on you. Good chat. What's your name, bro?
Chris.
Good on you, Chris. Yeah. Take care, mate.
No worries.
G'day, mate. How are you?
I'm all right.
What sort of stuff do you collect?
I collect records, old toys, and car stuff, car-related items, like car books and brochures.
Yeah, what sort of records do you get, mate?
Well, I collect specifically late 60s, early 70s, hard rock, progressive, psychedelic, and some of the later Flying Nun New Zealand LPs.
Do you think New Zealand's got some pretty good collectible records?
The earliest stuff is, I'm not too sure about the latest stuff. I haven't really got into listening to that.
What about car stuff?
What about car stuff?
Well, what about car stuff that turns you on, mate?
Car books, mainly English, American and Australian. Some of the Japanese books are quite unusual, so when you see those turn up there, worth picking up.
What about toys?
Old matchbox toys, 1950s, 60s, 70s and 80s. Some of the earlier Hot Wheels from the late 60s and 70s.
Cool. Well, that's good. I wish you all the best in finding that stuff. And how does someone get hold of you?
Oh, they can ring me on 021-452-105.
Okay, and if they've got something that they want to sell, or?
Yeah, if they've got something they want to sell, they can either ring or text me on that number.
Sounds great, mate. Thanks very much.
Thank
Have
you.
A great
thank
day.
Thank you for the interview.
Okay.
To you.
Okay, bye. How's it going, mate?
I'm good, thank you, and yourself?
Very good. What's your name, bro?
I'm Stinky Jim.
I'll get you on Stinky Jim. Now, what sort of records do you collect?
I collect a lot of reggae, hip-hop, predominantly black music, but all sorts of over the place, electronic stuff, the good stuff, everything, anything that's good.
Who would be some of your favourite artists?
Oh, my favourite artists? Ooh, I'm a big man for The Clash. That's the foundation thing for me. And what else? I find it very hard to say because there's so much bloody good music. Huge Lee Perry fan. There you go.
Really?
Yeah, loves Lee Scratch Perry. Love his productions.
Right.
Beautiful stuff.
What about New Zealand records? Anything that comes to mind?
The ones that I've made myself as Unitone Hi-Fi or Stinky Jim are always high priority. And personally, I also love the old sort of 45s from the 50s and 60s, weird things like Pioneer of the Reef or records commemorating someone winning a record or, you know, stuff like that. So the obscure and interesting, my goodness, they actually bothered to press this up records. I like those ones.
Okay, here's a big question to you, Jim. How many records do you reckon you got?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the last time that when I did it for insurance, this is going back 15 years ago, I think we were on about 30,000 LPs and 12s and a lot more 45s. But I've sold a lot in the last 10 years, so who knows, but there's lots and there's lots of good ones.
What do you think would be the rarest one you have?
Well, the rarest records I have are things that I've made myself or been involved with on my own record label where I have the only copy of things. I have dub plates that have been made in Jamaica where there is only one copy of that record.
Fantastic.
And I have it. So where, I can't get any rarer than that.
Where does somebody get hold of Stinky Jim?
They find me on 95BFM every Tuesday night.
Wonderful.
For the last 33 years.
Fantastic. Any Facebook page or anything like that?
I'm on Twitter.
Twitter. Okay.
But, I'm not on Facebook because I don't agree with them.
Okay.
I'm a grumpy old man.
I would sense that.
Yeah.
Stinky Jim's an individualist.
Well, that's right. You've got to be. Yeah.
An individualist with Buku Records.
Yes. Sad but true.
Fantastic. Pleased to meet you, Stinky Jim.
Likewise.
Take care, bro.
And what's your name, sir?